Thank you very much. I will speak about the spreading models of a special class of binary spaces, namely Ulrich sequence spaces. First, let me just remind you quickly the spreading models. This already came up a couple of times during the workshop, so this is just to remind you the definition. Just one word about notation, though. So X tilde I's are the is the spreading model of the basic sequence XI. So XI is the generating sequence in the space X. And of course, you realize from the definition that not for every basic sequence can have a spreading model. But thanks to Ramsey theorem, we know that every normalized basic sequence has a subsequence with a spreading model. Now, the approach I will be considering is due to Androulakis, Odell, Schlumpret, and Tomczyk-Jagerman, and it's following. What they consider is following. So consider the set of all spreading models of a binary space X, which are generated by weakly null sequences, and denote this set by SP sub omega X. And let us define a partial order on this set in a natural way, namely just by domination of basis. So I will say X tilde I dominates Y tilde I if for some constant K, the linear combinations of X tilde I in norm dominates the linear combinations of Y tilde I. So this is just a basis domination. And we will also identify equivalence spreading models in this set. So I'll be looking at only the equivalence classes in this set with this partial order. Now the question is, this is rather a general question. So given a binary space, what is the structure of this partial ordered set like? Of course, this is a very general question and there is no unique answer to this, but they have already given one answer to this question and it is following. This is true for every binary space X. So look at the countable subset C of this SP omega X. Then you can find another spreading model which is generated by a weakly null sequence again, which dominates every element of C with respect to this partial order. Now, having this question in mind, I would like to look at the Ulrich sequence spaces and try to determine what this set looks like in that class of binary spaces, and perhaps give it a description at least in some particular cases. To do that, first I want to introduce or remind you the definition of Ulrich sequence spaces and some basic facts. So we start with a function M. It is an Ulrich function if it is a real-valued, continuous, convex, and non-decreasing function defined on the positive line. And also we require that the value of function at 0 is 0 and at infinity it increasing to infinity. So for every such Ulrich function M, we associate the space of all sequence of scalars, which we denote by L sub M, so that if you look at this sum of M of absolute value of AN over some rho, if this thing is finite, then this sequence belongs to this set, this space. And we define a norm on this space by this formula here. So the norm of X is simply, you look at the infimum of all positive rows such that this quantity is less than 1. Now this makes this space into a binary space and it is called Ulrich sequence space. If you look at the unit vectors in this space, unit vectors belong to space, and we usually assume that the value of M at 1 is 1, so that this unit vector becomes normalized. And they form a symmetric basic sequence in this space, and we call the closure of span of this EIs space HM. There is an alternative description of this. In this definition of LM, if you require that all this sum is finite for all rho, then it coincides with the space HM. Now, there are some couple of important notions related to these functions, Ulrich functions, so I need to recall those notions too very quickly. And one of the most important one is what we call delta 2 condition. So a function, an ordered function m, satisfies delta 2 condition if following holds. So you look at the limit supremum of the ratio of m2t over mt, and if this is finite, then the Ollich function satisfies delta 2 condition, and I will denote this by m belongs to delta 2. What is the meaning of this? Well, meaning is listed here. In that case, the space Lm and Hm coincides as a set. And we know that the Ei form a basis for Hm, therefore it forms a basis for Lm. Moreover, delta 2 condition gives you that this basis is bounded and complete. Equivalently, there is no C0 in this space. And the last thing said, also Lm cannot contain the space L infinity. So these are the nice class of Ollich functions, and I will be interested mostly with these functions. Now, next thing, what we want to do is we want to also compare Ollich functions. And the way we are doing this is, again, a natural way as following. So when we have two Ollich functions, M1 and M2, we say M2 is less than or equal to M1. This is, again, a partial order on the set of Ollich functions. Or we say M1 dominates M2, or M2 is dominated by M1. If there exists such constant so that the value of M2t is less than constant times M1kt. K is another constant there. And if this is true for all t, in given interval around zero. And what is the meaning of this? The meaning is if you write down the definition of the Ollich norms, then what you get is that M2 is less than M1 if and only if the unit vector basis of HM2 is dominated by the unit vector basis of HM1. Notice that the inequalities go the same way for functions and for the spaces, so it's easy to remember. Also, we'll identify equivalent Ollich functions, namely if M1 dominates M2 and M2 dominates M1, then they are equivalent, and the meaning is that they are same spaces, that is, their unit vector bases are equivalent. Now, when Lindenstrasz and Zaffiri studying the subspace structure of this Ollich sequence spaces, they came out following sets. So what we do is we start with an Ollich function M, and we consider following subsets of the Banach space C0 1/2. This is the usual Banach space of real-valued continuous functions on this interval. So what you do is you pick a positive lambda here. The capital lambda is just any positive number. So you form a new function, M lambda T over M lambda. This is still an Ollich function. And then you look at the set of all such functions where lambda ranging in some interval, and you look at the closure in the norm topology of this Banach space C0 1/2. And this is called EM lambda. I will most of the time consider EM1. And then you look at the EM, you look at the intersection of all such sets, so you just shrink it to by taking lambda closer to closer to zero, you just shrink your set. And this set is called EM. And CM1 and CM, they are convex combinations of this set EM1, where lambda is 1 in this case, and CM is a convex combination of EM, and again, you take the closure in the same norm. It turns out that these sets, as subsets of this Banach space C0 1/2, they are all compact, and they consist entirely of Ollich functions. And why do we introduce, or why they introduce this set? The reason is the following result. So the theorem says following about the subspace structure of all the sequence spaces. It turns out that they are very nice spaces. The first one says, if you look at any infinite dimensional subspace Y of HM, that subspace contains a further subspace Z, which is isomorphic to some Ollich sequence space. So Ollich sequence spaces are saturated by Ollich sequence spaces again. And the next one says, if you have a subspace of HM with a subsymmetric basis, subsymmetric means it is equivalent to all of its subsequences, then there exists n in this set CM1, so that xi is equivalent to unit vector basis of Hn. So in other words, all the subspaces with subsymmetric basis, they are just some other Orlich sequence spaces. Moreover, this function n comes from this CM1. So this is the importance of this set. And in fact, converse is also true. So Hn is subspace of Hm. These are all sequence spaces, if and only if n belongs to set CM1. So in other words, the set CM1 here coincides with all the subspaces of Hm, which has a subsymmetric or symmetric basis. So this is a kind of classification of subspace of all the sequence spaces. Now, after this introduction, I'd like to now look at the spreading models of Orlich sequence spaces. And the first thing we have is following. Suppose x tilde always denote my spreading model in the space. Suppose this is a spreading model of Hm, some Orlich sequence space, which is generated by a Wigton null basis sequence in the space. Then x tilde I is equivalent to unit vector basis of Hn for some n which coming from CM1. So compare with the theorem of the first part. So this CM1 appears again. In fact, the proof of this is very similar to the proof of this one. And in particular, because of this theorem, we remark that all spreading models generated by Wigton null sequences already live in the space. In fact, we have more. It turns out that the spreading model is just equivalent to a subsequence of the generating Wigton null basic sequence. So, and if you write it down what it means, if you look at the second statement here, so as Hn is a spreading model of Hm generated by a Wigton null sequence, if and only if the function n belongs to CM1, and this other condition is Wigton null condition, so limit of n over n t over t when t goes to 0 is 0. In other words, this Hn cannot be isomorphic to L1. Now, this set CM1 and the set of spreading models of Hm turns out to be very related. So by abuse of notation, we can say following. So by proposition, we know that the set of all spreading models of Hm generated by Wigton null sequences corresponds to some Orlich sequence space where n comes from CM1. So it is contained, we can say, in CM1. Moreover, any function in CM1 corresponds to a symmetric basic sequence in the space, which is in particular a spreading model. Therefore, it is contained. Sp of Hm, by this I denote set of all spreading models of the space Hm. So this is the situation here. Now, I would like to come back to the first theorem I mentioned, this upper bound theorem. And I'd like to give a proof of this in this case, which is very easy observation in this case. So this, in particular, illustrates very well the result of this upper bound result. So we are in Orlich sequence space case now. Suppose you have HNI sitting, there are spreading models of HM generated by Wigton null sequences. We already know by this proposition that all spreading models are in this form. Then there exists a HN0, which is again a spreading model generated by another Wigton null basic sequence, such that HN0 dominates HNI for all I. And how that proof goes? Quite easy. So we know that HNI belong to this set, and by this we know that NI are in set CM1. So pick all these functions NI. And we also know that they are generated by the Wigton null sequences, so they satisfy this limit condition as well. So just define N0 to be an infinite convex combination of all this. So just take sum of 2 to the minus I and I. And it's easy to check this condition again. Therefore, it means that HN0 belongs to SP omega HM. And moreover, it dominates all of NI by the constant 2 to the minus I. So this is your upper bound here. Now we know that spreading models are and this set CM1 are closely related. So let us look at this set CM1. What can we say about it? The first thing says that this theorem says, suppose you have an Orlich function which has a delta 2 condition, and suppose that there exists n in CM1 such that n is not dominated by m. In that case, CM1 already contains an uncountable increasing chain, increasing with respect to this partial order I defined. So if you translate this into our spreading model language, what you get is this. Suppose you have an Orlich sequence space such that m is a nice function which satisfies delta 2 condition. And suppose that there exists Hn, a spreading model generated by a Wickenau sequence, whose unit vector basis does not dominate the unit vector basis of the original space. Then in that case, you get uncountably many, an uncountable increasing chain in the set of spreading models of Hm. So in other words, if you are looking for an Orlich sequence space which has few spreading models, then Hm must be the dominating all of them. I would like to show an application of this, just like one of those considered in a OST paper I mentioned earlier, just to a concrete example, is following. Let's start with an Orlich sequence space which is not isomorphic to L1. And suppose that Hm is L1 saturated, which means that every subspace contains a further subspace which is isomorphic to L1. Then what you get is following. For all n in CM1, which is where Hn is not isomorphic to L1, if you look at the set of spreading models which are generated by Wickenau sequences in this subspace, then this set doesn't have a maximal element. In other words, it has an uncountable increasing chain. Moreover, following is true. Pick any a real sequence lambda n, which is increasing to infinity, but not faster than n, then there exists Hn0, a spreading model of Hn of the subspace such that this equality holds. The first condition says lim sup n over, if you look at the norm of EI, EIs are unit vector basis of Hn0 now. This lim sup tends to infinity. In other words, Hn0 is not isomorphic to L1. The second one says that this dominates lambda n. So in other words, this new Hn0 is squeezed between n and lambda n. So that means that under this condition, every subspace of Hm, which is not isomorphic to L1, admits many spreading models which arbitrarily come close to L1, but still not isomorphic to L1. The thing is here, L1 is not spatial in this case, although it was spatial in their paper. You can do the same for all LP spaces with slightly different assumption. If you don't insist that this happening hereditary in the space, then you can do this pretty much for every Orlich sequence space. All right. Now, what I want to look at is the Orlich sequence spaces which have only finitely many spreading models. This was actually the main motivation to look at this thing. So I'm looking at Orlich sequence spaces LM which have only finitely many spreading models, and I'm trying to describe the set of spreading models here. So by this two bar, I will denote the cardinality of the set. So the bar SP omega LM denote the number of mutually non-equivalent spreading models of LM generated by Wickenau sequences. There are simply a number of equivalence classes in this set. So the result says following. You take an Orlich sequence space which is not isomorphic to L1. In the case of L1, there is nothing to prove. So suppose that this set of spreading models generated by Wickenau sequences are finite. Then following holds. The first one says the space must be reflexive. I avoid C0 here by looking at LM. So if I had to write the statement in terms of HM, then I had to avoid C0 as well. So because I don't know something about C0, that's why I'm avoiding this. So this has to be reflexive. In particular, if you look at the set of all spreading models generated by Wickenau sequences or all spreading models, they coincide. And moreover, they coincide with the set CM1. Remember, initially, the first one was contained in CM1, and CM1 was contained the other one. Now they all coincide. And The more interesting thing is our next one. The second one says HM is the upper bound of this set of all spreading models, which we already proved that before, because if it doesn't dominate, then it has to have uncountably many in the space. And moreover, there is a lower bound in this set, and it is some LP space, where P is between 1 and infinity. And it's also not difficult to show that in this case, if you look at any two spreading model, there exists the least upper bound and greatest lower bound. And in particular, this set, this partial ordered set, is a lattice. Now, the natural question is, what kind of example do you get? It turns out that we have many different kind of examples. So here I list some of them. For each of the following lattices, there exists an order sequence space such that the partial order set of spreading models with respect to this partial order is isomorphic to the structure of the lattice. The first one is a linear chain of n elements. This is very easy to construct, and there are many ways of constructing this. And the next one says, it doesn't have to be a linear chain all the time. You can get following lattices too. These lattices are called the inclusion lattice of a set of n elements. So just pick a set of n elements and look at all subsets of this and define a partial order on that by set inclusion. So A is less than B if A is included, if A is subset of B. Then you get this kind of pictures. I draw for n equal to 2 and n equal to 3. For example, in n equal to 2 case, so you have a set of two elements, A and B. So this denotes that A and B, the upper bound, the whole set, and lower bound is empty set. Now, it turns out that there are examples whose spreading model structure is isomorphic to this. By theorem, the upper bound is HM itself, and the lower bound is some LP space. And these two incomparable nodes, they are some other Ohlich sequence spaces where the function comes from set CM1. You can also do the same for cube when n equal to 3, and for any n. Now the natural question is there a class of lattices which you get from this one? There are many class of lattices studied in lattice theory. I don't know the answer, but I checked only two classes, two important classes of lattices. They are namely distributive one and the modular ones. A lattice is called distributive if it satisfies this condition I wrote down here. I set distributive the relation. And the fact from lattice theory is that if you look at this two triangle here, this is not a distributive lattice. Simply pick x, y, z, the middle nodes here. Then you will see that in one side you'll end up the upper bound, in the other one you'll end up the lower one. And the interesting fact is that a lattice of any size is distributive or not determined by this. So a lattice is distributive if it has a sublattice which is isomorphic to this true triangle. Now I have an example which looks like this, so this class is not contained in distributive lattices. Same goes for modular one, the definition is this, I will not elaborate. And there's similar result. A lattice is modular if and only if it doesn't contain a sublattice which is a pentagon. And I have this kind of example here. So in particular, these lattices are not modular either. Is there any theory behind this? I don't know. This is all I could get so far. I think I better stop here. Thank you very much.